Going Linux, episode 139, an Audacity tutorial, and I'm interviewed on a Mac podcast. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice to help you in going Linux.
In today's episode, another episode provided by our listeners. We hope that you'll find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. So, Tom, today we start with a listener contribution from Richard Rucroft, who is a podcaster from Canada. His site is rustymicrophone.com. And we follow that with a rebroadcast of my appearance on the NoSillaCast podcast, where Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast interviews me about Linux. Now, Allison's podcast is, as she builds it on her website, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. And I had a blast speaking with Allison. I wish I could include the entire conversation, including the what may end up as outtakes from the beginning, as well as some of the stuff we talked about after the official recording completed. So we'll have that towards the end, and we'll start with Richard's contribution right up front.
Great. Thank you, Richard, and thank you to anybody else who wants to make some content for us. Pick up that microphone, record something, send it in.
Okay, and here's Richard's tutorial. We'll follow up with my interview by Allison Sheridan.
Hi folks, this is Richard from Toronto. Audacity, it's a wonderful piece of software and I've been using it for years, and I've often thought of buying commercial recording software and mixing software, but I never have. I've always used Audacity exclusively on Windows, however, but this is the first time I have ever actually completely used Audacity to do post-processing on a podcast. And I'd like to explain to everyone how I've done this. The recording session was done using two condenser microphones going into a mixer, and the output from the mixer goes into a Tascam recorder, in this case a DR07. That puts the audio onto an SD card in .wav format. Well, once that's completed, I pop out the SD card, shove it into a Linux machine, which is running Mint 10, and it has Wine and Levelator on it as well. So I'd like to explain the process of doing the post-production. The very first thing I do is I drag the .wav file onto the Audacity work area, and it comes up as a stereo track. I don't want really a stereo track. I use the drop-down menus to split the stereo track into two. I then erase one of them, and I make the remaining one mono. So therefore, I have one mono track on the Audacity desktop work area. My next step is to amplify the audio as much as is possible, and Audacity has a wonderful tool to do that. Under the effects, it has an amplify effect. That effect will populate a dB number in there automatically, and I would recommend accepting that number as an amplification factor, because Audacity is smart enough to know how much room there is between your peak audio and the ceiling. The ceiling, of course, is the digital limit of how far you can have your audio amplified. And by accepting the default level, you will not introduce, I don't think it will allow you to do any more than that anyway. It'll be perfect. So now you have your programming material on one track, and we need to introduce some bumper music. So from my file folder somewhere on my computer, I pull in the bumper music. Mine is in MP3 format. Doesn't really matter what format it is. Audacity will handle it. And I now have two tracks. The programming track on one, number two track is the bumper music. What I do is I copy the bumper music and I select on a blank workspace area and I paste it. So now I have two copies of my bumper music. So I have track 1, 2, and 3. Track 1 is the programming material. Track 2 and 3 is the identical bumper music. And for some reason, the Windows version of Audacity doesn't lock the tracks. But the Linux version, you have to go into tracks and unlink the tracks. That way you can choose the left-right tool, the left-right arrow tool, to position your track information anywhere you want. I move the main programming material just to the right a little bit to give some room. Then I move the track number 2 to the input, to the beginning area of the program where I'm going to process it for music at the introduction, the intro. And I move track number 3's version of the bumper music all the way down to the end of the program. And using the positioning tool, I can put them exactly where I want. And then I go into some other tools that adjust the amplitude of the bumper music so that it's loud when you first listen to the podcast and the music fades down as the person starts talking. And then I use tools in Audacity like fade out. At the other end, I'll do the exact same thing in reverse for the outro music, and it will fade in, and amplification will become a little louder when people stop talking. So that's the now you have three tracks on the work area of Audacity. Audacity is a full mixer program. So in the Windows version of Audacity, we do a quick mix, and that works fine. In the Audacity version of the Linux version of this, we have to do something called mix and render. The menu names are just a little bit different from one version of Audacity to the next. Once we mix all these three tracks down, we now end up again with one track, which has our bumper music at the beginning and end of the programming material. So now is the time to select that track and export as wave.wav. And I'm going to put that somewhere on the computer where I know where it is, in a folder, usually on my desktop. And I start Levelator, of course, under Wine. You don't have to do this because Audacity has very decent normalizing tools and compressor tools to do a half-decent job of getting your levels proper. But I prefer Levelator, and the reason why I prefer Levelator is because it takes the RMS value, the root mean square value of the energy of the sound, and makes it so that when you're listening to this in the end, it will not bang away at your ears, and you won't have to strain to listen to the quiet portions. It will be very gentle on your ears all the way through and proper level. That's what it's designed for. So I can't drag and drop onto Levelator with the Windows with the Linux version of Levelator. So by double clicking on the Levelator itself, it navigates me to I can navigate to the input file, which is file.wav, and my 45-minute wave file took about 4 minutes for Levelator to crunch through it. And you can see some activity on the Levelator icon while this is taking place. When it stops, you will have another file in the exact same file folder that the first one was. The output file is called file.output.wav. Now we get out of Levelator, close it, and I restart Audacity again. And the reason why I do, I've used Audacity for so many years, I think... In the very beginning, it used to crash. If you kept editing all day long with it, it would eventually crash. So, but I'm sure that it's much better now. But I still have the habit of closing right out of it and restarting it. Then I'll drag my output file from Levelator onto the work area of Audacity. And I pretty well have a really good podcast on the work area, in the work area of Audacity. Now I have to, by the way, I just wanted to comment on the quality. Since I'm doing transcoding, most people don't like to lose quality. The bitrate on the .wav files is 705 kilobits per second. Well, in the end, my MP3 file that I'm going to make will be 128 kilobits per second. So it is my opinion that you have not really lost any quality, because the WAV files are still way up there in quality. So by dragging the output from Levelator back into Audacity, now I'm going to do time domain editing. I'm going to go along and get rid of all the ums and ahs and little things like that. If you drag a portion of sound that you don't want, here's a little trick. If you drag a section of song that's highlighted and you want to press the delete key just to get rid of it, you're going to end up with a click. And in order to, I just found out about this too. I've been using Levelator, I've been using Audacity for years, and I just found out about this. If you press the Z key before you delete a section, what Audacity does is it goes to the selected portion of audio and looks at the nearest zero crossover point of zero voltage, and it will go to that at the beginning and end of the selection that you're going to eliminate. That way, when you press the delete key, you don't have a click. And it's an amazing little feature that I don't think hardly anybody knows about. So when I'm finished doing all my time domain stuff in Audacity, I want to export as MP3. Linux people might want to export as OGG as well. That's fine. I choose 128 kilobits per second because I happen to think the quality should be up there as much as possible. It's not like the old days when file sizes were as important then. People do lots of video nowadays, so I don't think the file size is anywhere near as important as it used to be. Then I'll use a Linux program called EasyTag. And EasyTag, of course, will allow me to put my album art in and the correct MP3 tags, the information that will appear on the iPod or MP3 player as someone's playing it. They want to see the correct words, and they want to see the album art. So that's the way you do it. Audacity is a wonderful program. I also do voice analysis, and this might be of interest for people who are not necessarily doing podcasts. But if you go to my website, rustymicrophone.com, you'll find a podcast on reverse speech analysis, where I interview David Oates, and he tells everyone how to do reverse speech analysis. You can find out whether someone's telling the truth or not very easily. I've been doing this for years, and rather than buying expensive software like some of the people in that hobby do, I would suggest just using Audacity. You can select a portion of speech, and if you want to run it backwards, you just bring down the effects reverse, and by holding the shift key before you press the play, it'll keep repeating that over and over and over again. Audacity is a wonderful tool for reverse speech analysis, voice analysis. I hope this helps people. My name's Richard Rucroft. Thank you very much. And you're doing an excellent job on going Linux. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks, Richard, for that. And we'll also have links in the show notes to our video screencast tutorials on using Audacity to edit a podcast and to record a podcast. We did those some time ago. And right, we have those. We also have, I'll provide a link to my Scale Southern California Linux Expo talk on recording a podcast using Linux. So we have lots of links for you, lots of ways to learn this, including what Richard just provided for us. So thanks again, Richard.
I don't think we can say lots of links. That's patented.
Yes. What? Well, no, that's lots of Linux links. So I think we're okay.
Oh, okay. We're safe.
We're safe. Yeah. And now my interview by Allison Sheridan on the NoSillaCast podcast.
Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond. And this time, I would like to welcome to the show Larry Bushy, creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. How are you today, Larry?
I'm great. How are you, Allison?
I'm doing fantastic.
I'm happy to be on your show.
Well, I always try to say that my show is an ever so slight Macintosh bias, and I've been accused lately of being only Macintosh bias, and it is intended to be a slight, well, sarcastically slight bias. So I wanted to get you on the show, and we actually have never met.
That's right. But
I think the way we virtually met was you were a speaker at the Scale Conference, the Southern California Linux Expo, and a good friend of the show, Donald Burr, was there, heard you talking in your talk about podcasting, and heard you mention the NoSilicast, and so he connected us, and here we are.
Here we are, and I've been listening to your podcast for a while, Allison, and I got that connection through Nightwise, mutual friend.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, I've been listening to his podcast for a while. He says, you ought to listen to Allison. And it took me a little while to, you know, get up to having some space on my audio playback machine, which happens to be an Android phone, running out of space on there. Got a little larger SD card, and so a little more space. So I added your feed, and I've been listening to you for about five or six episodes, maybe a little bit longer.
Oh, cool.
But in browsing your website, I found a series on podcasting that was really very helpful to me in preparing for my talk at Southern California Linux Expo. So thank you for your help, even though you didn't know you were helping me at the time.
Well, that's, you know, the reason I built that was because I didn't get here by myself, you know, and I looked at that as a way of paying it forward, is I had about 352 people who helped me figure out how to do it a little bit at a time.
Yeah,
I figured, okay, if I can hand that off to the next guy and, you know, in the spirit of open source. And by the way, I do have a Creative Commons license on my website. You used my material, but you gave me credit for it in your talk. So it's all happy joy.
Yeah, there we go. And I used a lot of material from a lot of people. And as I said to you in our preparation for this, I've built on the shoulders of giants, and you're just one of those giants that I've built on the shoulders of.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Now, Going Linux podcast was not your first podcast, right?
That's right. I started podcasting in 2005, and it was a Windows podcast. A colleague of mine at work and I had actually started back in 1999, before podcasting was even invented, sharing our Windows tips with employees of the company by way of voicemail messages, and we were limited to 3 minutes on a voicemail message, but we had a distribution list that was all of the people who had computers at the company. And so we would send these messages out within 3 minutes. Took us a long time to get a 3-minute message consistently.
Hard.
Yes. And from there, when podcast was invented, we took it to the internet and began podcasting. And then I switched over to Linux. He stayed with Windows. And so then I lost the domain through no fault of my own. My host did not renew the domain for that podcast.
Shoot.
And we decided, let's just
shut her down.
Yeah, because I had this other podcast called Going Linux. And that was about 2007. Started it with a gentleman from Southern California as well, down in the San Diego area, a gentleman by the name of Serge Ray, who worked at a university. And as he got promoted in the university, he ended up not having enough time to continue the podcast. So for a while, I was solo. And then Tom Chaudoir, the current host that I've had since then, and he's been with me for quite a number of years, and we've have been having a lot of fun, and we have never met, the two of us.
Oh, neat. Where does he live?
He's in Wisconsin.
Oh, so far away.
Yeah, exactly. But it's been a lot of fun, and he and I banter back and forth and talk about Linux and just get into geeky stuff.
Well, that sounds fantastic. You know, I think it is very cool to meet people in person, but it's still pretty rich experience, I think, knowing people like this.
Yeah.
I didn't meet Bart until August or September of last year. And But I'd known him for 4 years. I talked to him every week on, in audio, and we'd chatted all week long for 4 or 5 years. And so he's one of my best friends.
Yeah.
And yet had never met until just recently.
Exactly. It's strange what friends the internet makes.
And here we are.
Yeah.
Well, we did want to get into, I think you like to start with a problem to be solved, don't you?
I think that's your technique, but, but I thought I would include a problem to be solved here. And so in preparing for the talk, as well as, you know, discussing podcasting in general, you generally, starting off podcasting, aren't sure whether it's something you really want to continue doing because you haven't started yet. You don't know what the challenges are. You don't know what the problems are going to be. You don't even know if you're going to be able to continue to come up with topics from day to day, week to week, month to month, depending on how frequently your podcast comes out. So the problem to be solved is, well, I want to try podcasting, but I'm not sure it's for me. I really don't want to spend a lot of money if it's not going to pan out. So that's the problem.
Right, right. Now, what's cool about podcasting, I think the reason it's proliferated so well is you can really do this on the cheap. But it's sort of like a gateway drug because then you're going, oh, I need a better mic. Oh, hey, look at that recording software. That's really neato. I need that.
Yeah. Maybe I could improve the sound if I got a mixer and a pop filter. And then suddenly it mushrooms out.
I need a boom
control
for my microphone.
Yeah. Right. Of course, you need a mic stand. Come on.
Jeez, so many things you need to do.
Gadget hounds. That's us. So if you want to go on the cheap, of course, there are lots of free software programs out there that allow you to edit and record your audio, but there are very few operating systems that are out there that are free, and Linux is one of them. So if you have even an old computer laying around and you want to set it up as your podcast recording studio, you could toss Linux on there, get Audacity for free. There are free places you can store your audio, and it's really a very inexpensive way to go. Now, you're going to have to pay for the computer hardware, unless you get one secondhand somewhere. You're going to have to pay for a microphone, or at very least, some sort of headset with a mic. And I would very highly recommend a USB headset as opposed to an analog headset, simply because it's already digital, and that removes a lot of things like noise that analog signals can put in, and gives you the best quality for the least cost, I think. So there is some cost associated.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. I'm not sure you can actually really do it with an analog input mic. When I tried that, I think that's kind of like the original noob mistake, is you go, look, there's a microphone symbol right there on that little hole in my computer. I should plug something in it.
Yeah.
And then you do it, and you can't figure out why you get no volume.
Right, that, or you can't understand a word you're saying.
Yeah, I wanted to back you up just a little bit on Audacity. I did another tutorial called Audacity Setup for Podcasting, where I walk you through how to install Audacity and how to set it up for recording and what the different buttons mean. It's not a real tough program or anything, but I figured if that could get someone over the hump, it would help out.
Yeah. Now, I've written a tutorial and done actually a screencast as well, so it sounds like we are on parallel paths here on how to use how to use Audacity to record a podcast and to edit one. So I think between the two of us, we probably have some things that would help a lot of people get started with Audacity. And of course, since it's cross-platform, it doesn't matter whether you're on a Mac or Windows or Linux, it all works.
Great. You know, I just put mine in the show notes, and I'm making a note right now to get the link for your screencast on it for that, too. That's excellent.
Okay, I'll send that to you.
Yeah, I haven't done a lot of screencasts. We were talking before we got started. Audio is hard, but boy, video brings me to my knees. It's really fun, and it's so rewarding when it's done, and then you find out you messed one thing up, or, you know, 2 weeks later they changed the menu place, and you're screwed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that, and if you're recording an audio podcast and you figure you're going to have, maybe a 30-minute podcast, allow yourself, an hour and a half prep time and edit time and just to get it right with video. It's even worse. It's just the amount of time it takes more than anything else. It's technically challenging, but it's also time-consuming, and I just don't have time.
Absolutely. Hey, hang on a second. I just paused, Larry. I'm getting breakup on your voice, and I'm wondering whether my son's like decided to play an online game or something.
Okay. It could also be my internet. It's been raining, and our cable connection is underground, and what happens is...
Sprinkles, it gets wet.
Yeah, exactly, and then I get no internet, so it
you
could
know, it's
be
funny.
My side too.
That happens to us at work. I work for a multi-billion-dollar corporation, and if it sprinkles, the network goes down. So come on.
come on, guys. Can't you afford just a little bit better than this? Yeah.
I used to have this setup where I had relays to zero. I had a way of doing it, and I'd have to go look up my own tutorial to figure that out. Okay, well, we'll just carry on.
Power through and edit stuff out if it chops up too badly.
I don't edit anything.
Oh, okay, well, sure. Right. Hey, that helps with the prep time and the post-edit time.
I think I'll mention that. Here we go. So Larry and I just took a quick break because we are getting a little bit of Skype breakup, and he suggested that I could just edit out anything that sounds bad, and I explained to him that I don't edit anything. What was it you said back there?
Oh, that really helps with the post-recording editing time. If you don't do any editing, there's no time.
I'm telling you, that post-processing is quite good here.
Yeah, very good. Well, if Tom and I did that, we wouldn't be able to publish the show, I think. You know, we're kind of PG on our podcast, and although the internet doesn't have those restrictions, I don't want to risk it.
Yeah, well, the way I look at that is to me it's being more inclusive, right? Because if I can create a clean show, and I have had a couple of guests, I've had to slow down a little bit. The Matt Crack lads come to mind. Mm-hmm. But it just makes it more inclusive because everybody can listen, you know, and you're not going to offend anybody, or you got kids on the show. We got a lot of kids that listen to this stuff, and I want to encourage them to be geeks. So
yeah,
that's why I like it that way.
Absolutely.
All right, so we've got Audacity we got a free Linux operating system and a free recording application that works perfectly well. I mean, Audacity rocks, really.
Yeah, it does. It really,
really
does.
No reason to go beyond it. But what about the hosting of your audio files? What do you do for that?
Well, we actually use the Internet Archive. Those are the guys who do the Wayback Machine that allows you to go back to 1938 and look at the Internet back then. Well, maybe not that long ago, but they do a really good job of that. But they also archive a lot of audio and video and books and all kinds of stuff. They're really an online library, and they also allow you to store any public domain or Creative Commons licensed, anything that is shareable, on their site for free. And they allow you to link to the site, so all of our podcast episodes are hosted there, and we just maintain a website with links to the Internet Archive, MP3 files and OGG files that we've recorded.
No, that had actually never occurred to me until I was talking to Tom Merritt a couple of weeks ago, and he said, in a way, you're doing them a favor by hosting it there because they're scraping the internet and moving everything there anyway.
Yeah.
So if you host it there, you just saved them the bother of moving it for you later.
Well, exactly.
It's an odd way to think about it.
And me being a little cheap when it comes to wanting to spend money on podcasting, it's great because it's free. And if you are hosting your own files, you have the bandwidth costs, whereas if you're just pointing to files on the Internet Archive, you don't have everyone downloading the bits from your website. Your website's pointing them to Internet Archive, and that's where it's coming from.
Yeah. Now, how about the speed? I know I was talking to Bart about ideas like this, and one of the things he's noticed is it's really annoying if somebody's has slowed down download speeds. Have you noticed anything about that?
Not really. The Internet Archive sometimes does go down for maintenance and so on. And since the podcast that I do is spoken word only. I don't have really large files. I try to compress it down, which is fine when you've got voice only. If you're trying to do high quality music or something, that's not appropriate. But as a result, the downloads are fairly small. And even if you're streaming it from the Internet Archive using their player or even an HTML5 audio player, it seems to go just fine on most high-speed internet connections. Of course, if you were on dial-up, you'd have a problem. And many people, of course, with a podcast will put it into a feed and it just gets downloaded in the background and then you listen to it when you listen to it. So between all of those different options, I haven't noticed much of a problem in the past, I'd say 5 years or so, a while ago, before they upgraded their facilities and upgraded their utilities, or whatever you want to call it, their services, that's what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. There were a few more outages and a little more delay and lag and so on, but it hasn't been a problem for quite a long time now.
Well, I think one of the reasons Bart cares about the download speeds, and I'm with him on this, is there's a certain change that's kind of gone on with podcasting in the last more recent times, I think. When we first started, it was pretty much, yeah, dude, you know, do a show whenever you want. It's free. It's easy. You know, it's like mellow, you know, just when it comes in, it comes in. But now I think we're starting to appreciate podcasts that come on a schedule.
Yes.
And that's, of course, near and dear to my heart since I'm incredibly anal on coming out exactly every Sunday night, you know, haven't missed a show in years and years. And so I think what happens is you it's Monday morning, you're getting ready to go to work, you plug in your iPod, you want that show downloaded now. Or, you know, you listen to Mac OS Ken. Well, you don't want to wait until tomorrow to get Mac OS Ken because it's today's news. Yeah. So you kind of want to get him right before you go to work. Well, if he had his show on a real slow download site, I'd be sitting there waiting and going, I got to go to work. Got to go.
Yeah. Well, I understand that. And I haven't noticed myself any problem with Internet Archive. And like I said, in years, I haven't had any complaints from any of the listeners. So I'm assuming that it's fine for most people. And
well, I suppose I could put some up and try downloading it and check what the speeds are and see how it is.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm using a $4 a month GoDaddy account for hosting my website. How picky can I be, right?
Hey, whatever works.
Hey, it does. It works. It's always up. I've had very little problem with them. So I am not knocking GoDaddy. I'm just mocking myself for being that cheap.
And as the old saying goes, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, now, you haven't found a free way to host your website, have you, or using WordPress.org or anything like that?
No, I have a hosting account, and I manually code the HTML on my site. So.
Oh, come on. With open source WordPress available to you and the open and free WordPress.com?
Well, I heard you say the words anal and picky. That so might apply to me as well. Yeah. I'm too much of a control freak. I don't want WordPress handling how things look. I want it to look the way I want it to look. So I know there's a lot of flexibility in those programs, and blog software has come a long way. And someday I may, when I get the energy, figure out how to switch it all over. And
well, it runs on Linux too. You know?
Yes, of course it does.
So do you host it yourself on your own server? Or?
Oh, no. I have, like I said, I have a hosting account, a hosting plan, and it's not the cheapest and it's not the most expensive. It's somewhere in the middle. It handles all the requirements, and I'm using a fraction of the space that I have available to me. But, hey, someday when the Going Linux empire grows larger and larger, I may use that space.
There you go. Now, what do you use for playback on your website? I heard you mention HTML5. Is that an HTML5 player I'm looking at there?
It could be. If you're in Safari, that's probably what it is.
Actually, I'm in Firefox.
If you're in Firefox, that's definitely what it is. And if you're in Internet Explorer 6, as many companies are, you'll see a Flash player there in place of that HTML5. And there's a little coding magic in the background to make it visible or invisible, depending on which browser you have. And it's actually pretty straightforward to do with HTML5. But I have some Flash players at different points, and the HTML5 player is something we've been playing around with for several months, and it's very, very nice. I've found it very appropriate even on some mobile devices. Some mobile devices will handle HTML5, some won't, depending on the browser you've got in that device.
I just recently switched over to using HTML5. Of course, on WordPress, it was just a plugin.
Yeah.
but anyway, I plugged that in, and one of the big advantages is now people can go to my website on an iPhone, and they can actually scrub back and forth within the episode instead of getting some, you know, looking at some giant MP3 file kind of thing. So
exactly.
A lot of people real happy with that. So yeah. That worked out pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So you've done the Windows thing and you've done the Linux thing. Are you a Mac user at all?
No, I have had my hands on a Mac a few times, but I'm not a Mac user. And
okay.
I know you can install Linux on a Mac. I've heard I've heard Nightwise do that, so I know it can be done.
Actually, I have to break and tell you, when you were talking about having an old piece of hardware around and putting Linux on it, I have a one laptop per child. The OLPC,
uh-huh.
And Nightwise helped me put Linux on that.
Okay, and how's that working for you?
Well, it was a really fun experiment because I found this site that said people have heard the story before, but I just love it, so I'm telling it again.
Okay.
I found this site that said you could do it, and basically you put it on a flash memory card.
Right.
I thought, wow, this is going to be really cool. So I start following the instructions, and I have no idea what I'm doing. I am completely out of my league, right? So I wrote to Bart, and I said, hey, Bart, you know, help me figure out what I'm doing here. And he at least explained the basic idea was you were going to put a file onto a thumb drive.
Right.
And then from the thumb drive, you install it onto the SD card that you're going to plug into the OLPC.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, I've got the basic idea. So it's word for word instructions. I have no idea what I'm doing. I mean, there were commands that had four commas in a row in them. I mean, I have no idea what this language even was. But I'm like, no, 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 no. I type it all in, right? And it doesn't work. So I wrote to Nightwise. I said, hey, Nightwise, I can't figure out what's going on here. What's the problem here? And he looks at it and he goes, I got no idea. He says, why don't you go to one of the Linux forums and ask them?
Right.
And I think it was a forum of Ubuntu they were putting on there. And he said, yeah, just go to the Ubuntu forums and check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, no, you know, I'm just really, really, you know, I don't even know how to ask the question in order to convey what I'm trying to do. You know, I'm out of my league. I can't do it. And he said, okay, here's what you do. Entitle your post, Noob Girl Needs Help.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, they got all these nice neck beards in the mother's basement, guys. They're going to help you.
Sure.
Right then. So casting aside my pride in its entirety, I went ahead and posted that in a forum where people were talking about exactly what it was I was trying to do.
Uh-huh.
And this guy, I got to look his name up to make sure I give him credit for it. But this guy in Singapore writes to me and he says, it turns out it's a problem with the SD card itself. For some reason, some of them just don't work. You're not doing anything wrong. The SD cards, there's something about it. Just buy any other brand. So I went out and I bought any other brand. I repeated the steps and it worked. It was beautiful. So I wrote back on the forums, thank you so much. This is great. This really worked well. And I put my podcast signature at the end on that post. The guy writes back to me and says, oh my gosh, I listened to your podcast. So I went from the US to Ireland to Belgium to Singapore back to me in a circle. Isn't that cool?
That is cool. And that's the power of the internet. And, you know, your experience on the Linux forum is kind of typical, I think, where you get somebody who helps you out and they show their appreciation. And turns out this guy in Singapore already had shown his appreciation by listening to your podcast. So that's great.
Now, the reason Nightwise is in the plot again, though, is then after I got it working, he goes, oh, Alison, you know what you need to do? You need to make it into a VPN server.
Sounds like Nightwise.
Well, guess what? It doesn't work at all now. I have completely broken it. I haven't ever been able to use it since.
Yeah, I think it might be just a little underpowered.
That is possible, but I can't even figure out how to get back to where I had Linux on it, or much less the original operating system.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I wanted to get back to the point here. What we were talking about was, so between using Windows and using Linux for podcasting, you know, what kind of differences, advantages, challenges do you see?
Well, let's see, differences. There really aren't many differences that I can imagine between using Windows or a Mac to do a podcast, other than the fact that the operating system that is running everything is different. That's it. It's the hardware is the same. The software, in many cases, if you're using cross-platform software, is going to be the same. And, maybe the cost would be different for the operating system. But other than that, that's all there would
My operating system only cost $39.
Well, what did you start with, though?
$25.
Yeah, but there you go.
$2,500. Okay, $2,800.
All right, all right. I won't belabor that. I'm not going to get on my Linux high horse.
That's all right. That's all right. Go for it.
Nah.
So what do you see the advantages of using Linux in this context?
Well, certainly free is very attractive. But even with that, if you're not sure that you want to podcast or you're just trying it out and you think you do want to podcast but you don't want to spend a lot of money on it, free is really attractive. It allows you to try before you buy, try before you invest, and it does allow you to record in very high quality. Linux is a first-rate operating system, and all of the software that runs on it is first-rate software, extremely high quality. Well, not all of the software. None of the operating systems that are out there have every piece of software that's super high quality. But if you stick to the ones that are most popular, that goes for any operating system, you're going to get something that's very good, high quality. And the nice thing about starting with Linux and the Linux software, the applications that go along with it, is once you've made your mark, once you've decided, yes, this is for me, and you start investing in all of those techno geek gadgets to help your podcast be better, you don't have to switch to something else. You can stick with Linux. You can, when you purchase a new computer, you can put Linux on there and continue with exactly what you've been running before, except with presumably better hardware and so on. No risk, no cost. It's really, all of those applications are getting better and better all the time as well. That's one of the other things you'll find with Linux, is because there's no cost associated with 99% of the software and the applications, you get the updates when you update your operating system. The updates for the applications come with it, and as a result, you're always on the forefront of the quality and the new features as folks bring them out for those applications. Now, that has pluses and minuses, of course, because as you get updates, sometimes they add new features that you don't know how to use. And then you start experimenting around, and then you get in trouble, and then you go, oh my goodness, how am I going to get this podcast done?
I have to say, though, that I'm a reasonably bright person, and I still find it very difficult to figure out how to load applications. I find with Ubuntu, and I'm not on 10.10, I'm on 10.4, so I probably need to run 10.10. It looks very pretty. I want to go to a website, click a download button, double click the installer and have it install, or maybe just drag the file, you know, the application into an applications folder and be done.
Okay.
And all this repository and there's, you go to update something and it tells you got to update something else and you get into update hell and.
Okay. Well, if you're on Ubuntu, you don't get into that update hell so much. You might on an RPM-based distribution like Fedora or something else, but even those distributions don't have that as much as they used to have. But a Debian distribution like Ubuntu, typically not a problem. And one of the things, Allison, that you need to do to get your mind wrapped around how to install software with Linux is stop thinking Mac, stop thinking Windows. It's not the same. With Windows, okay, you go to a website and you double-click an EXE and it installs. With a Mac, you just drag it over to a folder and it installs. With Linux, and especially with Ubuntu, if you go to the Applications menu and then go to the Software Center, which is also there in Ubuntu 10.04, everything you need is right there, and all you really it's like iTunes for applications. Think of it that way. You just open it up.
So it's a limited set, though.
Well,
it's not really everything.
That's where I run into
trouble is people tell me, oh, hey, here's a really cool Twitter client. You should install this. And
yeah.
Platinacat has got me into that where he says, this is a cool thing. You should test it. And it's not in the software center. And then I become paralyzed.
Yeah.
But so most stuff is, a lot of the good stuff is in the software center, though?
Yeah, the most popular stuff is there. The solid, rock solid, stable stuff is there in the software center. If you are adventuresome and you want to try out something that may be beta or maybe something that's from an obscure repository somewhere, then you'll need to open up the package manager And much like, and then you start going, oh, something different.
That's when I run away.
Yeah, well, think of the package manager as, if the software center is iTunes for applications, then the package manager is, I don't know how to describe it. It's what you wish iTunes was if you're a geek. And it allows you to do things that you can't do in iTunes. You know, you can go and you can tweak things and you can get this the way you want it, and you can switch this over here a little differently. So
probably not a good place for me to start learning how to use Linux.
Probably not. Stick with the software center, stick with the main applications, and you will be fine. And as soon as you've got that under control, then the package manager will make a little more sense to you, because really all that software center is a nice graphical front end to the package manager.
And okay, so let's say I'm going to download Ubuntu 10.10 today because I'm doing anything to avoid cleaning up my kitchen. I'll download that. I'm going to install it in VMware Fusion, so I've got a nice little install of that. Then I'm going to go to the applications menu and go to the what did you call it again? The application store or the
software center. Yeah.
Right. So I go to the software center and I type in Audacity.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a little button that I push it, and then I've got Audacity.
Yeah, it'll actually show you a list. So if there is more than one package that refers to Audacity, Audacity is an example where only one will show up. But there could be a list, and you click on the one you want, in this case, the only one that's listed, and then a button will show up that says install. And if you've already got it installed, it'll say uninstall or something like that.
So I just push it, and I don't have to type any weird code.
Nope. You should already be signed in. You don't even have to put in your password at that point, because you're getting it from a trusted source, which is the software center.
Okay.
Yeah. Now.
So the software center is vetted for malware and all that?
Yes, exactly. That's one of the advantages of Linux and the software center and going through a distribution like Ubuntu, is they do vet all of that. And, of course, you can go into the Synaptic Package Manager and add these funky repositories that may not be vetted, and then you've got to watch out for it. But for the average user, stick with the software center. It keeps you safe.
Yeah, I didn't even know about that.
Yeah.
So what kind of challenges do you see with using Linux in this environment?
Well, they're not really so much Linux. It has more to do with PC hardware rather than Mac hardware. Because the hardware is PC, for the most part, that people will install Linux on, there's a lot of variability in the hardware. Unlike Apple, who, you know, they have a fixed set of hardware, they test the operating system with every piece of hardware. Windows computers in general, which is typically what you have Linux installed on, unless you get a Linux computer pre-installed with Linux, which you can also do. But most people are installing on Windows hardware, and there's a lot of variability. So you may get an audio card that's really crappy, that does not give you good audio. Even when you're plugging in a USB, there may be hiss or a hum or all kinds of crap noises, in which case then you either have to replace the audio card if it's a desktop computer, or if it's a laptop, maybe you need a new laptop, or maybe you need to route your microphone through a mixer instead. So hardware challenges, that's one major challenge. And as I said, it's not limited to Linux. It's anybody trying to use a PC hardware to do audio recording. And that's really the one that comes to mind more than anything else. There are a few other challenges. If you think about the folks who are a little more geeky and do go into that Synaptic Package Manager, there are so many applications you could use to do recording and editing. And you could record using one piece of software and edit using another. And you can get something to encode in different codecs. And stick with the software center.
Actually, I want to bring you back to that. I had two questions. Let me see if I'll make myself a note to remember the second one, because it's quite a while ago I thought of it. So when you're going to buy a computer to run Linux on, do you buy a PC and then make it dual boot keeping Windows on it, or do you scrape Windows off and throw it away, or do you always start with the older hardware where you don't care about the Windows side at all, or is there a way to buy a machine that doesn't have Windows on it at all?
Yes.
You're a big help, Larry.
Yeah. Well, me personally, I will. Historically, I have gone and when I've needed a new computer, I purchase one with Windows on it and I replace Windows with Linux. It is less expensive to do that if you have. Yeah, if you can get computer hardware that's on sale somewhere like Costco or Sam's or somewhere like that. However, you run the risk there of having incompatible hardware. So I go through a checklist of what's on here for sound card, what's on here for video card, and make sure that whatever hardware I'm buying is compatible with Linux. Now, if you go to somewhere like System 76 or ZA Reason or what's the other one, Emperor...
What are those things?
Those are all companies that put Linux on hardware that they have specially chosen to run Linux. Oh. So it's guaranteed to be Linux compatible. And Frostbite Systems, that's the other one I was trying to think of. So any one of those companies can give, and Dell Computer does this as well, although it's really difficult to find their Linux compatible computers on their website. But all of these other ones I've mentioned are Linux-dedicated hardware and Linux-dedicated software, and some of them will allow you to choose the distribution. Others use only Ubuntu because that's the most popular and that's what they support. But lots of different options there, and no matter which model you purchase from them, it's guaranteed to work with Linux. They provide the support, and it's just like buying any other operating system on any other okay. computer. And I've also used older hardware and put Linux on it, and you have the same limitations there. You don't know what you're getting.
Yeah. Doesn't it bother you to buy it with Windows on it and throw it away because now you've just paid for Windows? I mean, don't you feel dirty doing that?
You know what? I'm more of a pragmatist than I am a Linux purist, so it doesn't bother me all that much, especially when I'm getting it on sale.
Now I see what you and Nightwise have in common. You guys would be a good combo together for sure.
Yeah.
Well, this has been – oh, no, I did have one more question. When you use Audacity, I've used it often to just make recordings, and I used to use it exclusively until GarageBand kind of came into its own. But what I haven't ever used it to do is to edit and mix separate tracks together. Like for this show, I'll do my own recording, and then I'll pull in the recording of you and I.
Mm-hmm.
So can you do that? Can you just add a track and just drag it into it?
I don't know. I haven't tried dragging it in. I think you probably could. I always use the copy and paste, you know, the Control X, Control V sort of thing.
Oh, okay. But you can do it.
Oh, yeah, you can do it. And there's also a menu selection to import an audio file. So either way, it works just fine. And if you have a mixer with multiple outputs and you have the hardware in your computer to handle it, it'll record in multi-track as well. I don't know what the limit is, but probably the limit of your mixer. So it's got all of those multi-track capabilities, and when Tom, my co-host, and I are recording, he's recording his end, I'm recording mine, and he sends me his end, and I just import it. And
oh, dear, you mix them together?
I mix them.
You don't record? Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's not as bad as it seems.
Do you guys clap to start at the beginning? How do you get a data point?
We used to, but then I found that on his side, the audio, he's even cheaper than I am. So he's using a PS3, a headset from a PS3, a USB headset. And his headset doesn't have really good noise isolation, so I can hear my voice on his end. So I just align the two voice tracks and then mute myself out on his track.
Oh, okay, because you can see it.
Yeah, I can see it, and I can align the two tracks pretty well.
Oh, that's pretty interesting.
Hence the need for massive editing.
I'm telling you, there's easier ways.
Yes, sure. I know, but hey, this is fun.
Yeah, actually, that's the problem is we're geeks, and so we like doing it, right?
Yeah, that is the problem, yes.
All right. Well, you know, Larry, this time absolutely flew by. I just looked at the clock, and I feel like you and I could talk forever. This has really been a great
connection.
We should
do this again.
Yeah, I would definitely like to. So maybe anytime you want to come on the show, you have something fun to talk about, let me know. I'm sure the audience would like it. I really do in spite of my own inadequacies, like to learn about other operating systems and other ways of doing things. Heck, I could have you on to, mock Android or something.
There you go. All right.
By this time in the show, the listeners will have heard some serious Android mocking on my part. But,
Well, I'm an Android user, so I'm not sure I'd be mocking it. Well, I've seen what it can and can't do, so maybe I'd mock something. So.
Well, just to give you, they will have already heard this, but read up the instructions on how to take a screenshot using an Android phone.
Oh, I haven't tried that. Oh, this will be fun.
Trust me, it's good mocking. But tell people a little bit more about your show, where they can find it, and maybe if they are interested in podcasting on Linux, they might want to hear your speech from the Scale Conference.
Sure. The website is goinglinux.com, and if you want to email me, send an email to goinglinux@gmail.com. See a pattern here? And the show notes are at shownotes.goinglinux.com. And you can, if you look at, where's that episode? Episode number 134 from March 20th, 2011, is my recording of the audio portion of my recording from the presentation that I did at Scale at Southern California Linux Expo. And in the show notes there, we have links to the do we have links? No, I'm going to have to add them in there. The links to the episodes we had done with the screencasts on using Audacity and so on. So I'll add those into that show note. And I'll send those to you as well so that you can include them in your show notes. And thanks for having me on the show, Allison. This has been
Larry, this is an absolute blast. This is fantastic. Glad we got together.
Yeah.
And there we go.
Okay.
That was fun.
That was fun.
I thought we'd been talking like 20 minutes. I looked up and it goes 38 minutes.
Yeah, and you said you usually go 30 and end up going 40, and we've well passed that. So
No, because you started recording really early. It was just about 40 minutes.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
yeah, I was wondering if you would notice that. Yeah, I'm looking at Ubuntu 10.10. It's gorgeous.
Isn't it?
Big, pretty puffy buttons.
Yeah. The other one you might want to look at, and maybe Nightwise would, here, another alternative.
Here it goes, off air.
The other one you might want to look at is Linux Mint 10.
Oh, no.
It is based on Ubuntu. Okay, so it's got the Ubuntu basics under the hood, but it is really geared for those people who want something nice and simple that just works. You don't have to worry about, I don't have the MP3 plugin. All of that's already pre-installed. It is as close to a Mac without looking like OS X as you can get in terms of functionality out of the box. Think about it. But certainly Ubuntu looks more like the Mac on the screen, you know, with the taskbar at the top and all the icons.
I can do the upside down. You know, I'm okay with that. I think because of the kind of person I am, I just love installing software. I love going, ooh, this is cool. Install it, you know?
Yeah.
And so to not be able to do that just makes Linux no fun to me.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, well, if I can't play, then, you know, what fun is that? So that's one of the reasons I don't play with it too often. But I did finally, I created a VM, and I put the VMs on an external drive because I was always deleting my VMs because I'd run out of disk space. So now I have my VMs on an external drive, so I can just throw Linux Mint and Ubuntu 10 out there and just play to my heart's content without worrying about size.
You got it, and I'd be interested to hear which one you like better.
Yeah, maybe that'll be a re-show in a few weeks or
something.
There
we go.
this has been a blast, Larry. I'm so glad that we got connected.
And our next episode will be a listener feedback episode. Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at our website, goinglinux.com, and there you can get more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations.
Email us with comments, questions, and suggestions, and if you have a topic you want us to cover on the show, use the Podcast Alley button on our site to leave your topic suggestion while you vote for us on their site, and we do appreciate your voting for us.
Yes, and if you'd like to send us an audio comment or an audio tutorial by email, we'll play it on the show, and our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com. Our voicemail number is 1-904-468-7889, and that is 1-904-4-OUR-TUX.
Follow our show updates on Twitter and Identica. We are Going Linux, all one word. You can download the episodes from the website, or you can use the HTML5 or the Flash player to play them right on the show notes page.
You can also get future episodes delivered directly to your computer automatically as soon as a new episode is available. For information and instructions on how to subscribe to a podcast, go to subscribe.goinglinux.com. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.